Good morning. This is KPBI Homer AM 890. The time is 9:02 a.m. and I'm Kathleen Gustafson, and this is the regular Thursday COVID brief. Let's check to see who's on the line. Peggy Yerkineff from Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, are you there?
Good morning.
Good
yes,
morning.
I am.
Good morning. And Jenny Carroll from the City of Homer.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning to you. Nurse Lauren Carroll?
Hi, Kathleen. You're loud and clear.
Hi. Good to hear you. And Dorotha Ferraro from South Peninsula Hospital.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. Now, let's start with Peggy Yerkineff from the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, because most schools in the district are fully remote at this point, as just a few, some of the village schools are open. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. We have 5 schools open, and all the rest are in 100% remote learning right now.
And can you explain to people the rubric or the way that you determine whether or not schools are open? Because a lot of the questions I've been getting are simply, when are schools going to open again? So can you explain to people how that decision is made?
I would love to do that, because I'm hearing a lot of confusion about that. So to do that, I'm going to do a really quick overview, and I'm going to take everybody back to thinking about May. Remember when we first, everything was closed to students in March, April, and May? And at that time, the Department of Education told all school districts to develop a Smart Start plan. And at that point, I was in a lot of those phone calls. Our superintendent was also coming back from being out. And they developed a framework for all the schools to work with so that we could have a common understanding across school districts in our diverse state. So we put a team together, and Director Assistant Superintendent Clayton Holland, and he was our Director of Student Support Services, he put the team together of 20 people, and it included, there was teachers on it, there was our union representative, school board member, educators, directors, and we put that team together, and we spent 2 months building the Smart Start plan and looking at everything, and that's been on our website. It's through a link on our Facebook page. We communicated. I went back through and saw all the different things that I put out all summer long about our Smart Start plan. We gave that to the Department of Education for review, as well as to the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. And what they did is they looked over the whole plan, and they offered feedback to the district, which we then incorporated into that plan. And everybody can read the whole plan. Then we took it to the school board, and they approved it. And we've said all along that it would iterate. And when I was re-looking at some of the metrics we used and the words we used, at that point we were talking about if we were ever experiencing community spread, it could trigger red. And we were in a bubble, in a way, on the peninsula. We weren't experiencing what the rest of the country was. But now we are. And we're operating now with that high risk, because we know that in low and medium risk time period, when we follow all the mitigation plans, we can pretty safely open school. But the studies have shown that when your community is in high risk, it just is high risk, even with the mitigation plans. And we're seeing that. I tried to count how many schools had positive cases this week that our nurse team was doing contact tracing with. And Monday alone, there was 6 schools that had positive cases in the school that we did contact tracing. Tuesday, there were 3. And so we have a new metric that we're going to be putting up on the website. I'm working on it now by Friday, that can actually show people how many positive cases there have been with staff or students, and then how many people need to be quarantined. So that's a little bit of background of how the whole plan came to be. And what we're working on right now is we know that this is really hard for everybody. We want our staff to be safe. We want our students to be safe. This pandemic is difficult. There will be an end to it. So our team has been working on looking at what are some other things we can do. How can we get creative and bring solutions to have more students in schools during high risk? Since especially on the Central Peninsula, it appears with the spread, we'll be in high risk for a little longer. So I don't know if that's helpful, but all of that's on the website. I'm working this week to put out a reminder and easy to understand, so people can remember this is what how we're operating, how the decisions are being made.
How
and one last quick thing, we
go
do
ahead.
Work closely with the medical advisory team that we put together. I think that started being developed in July, and we did add recently, and she was with us yesterday, mental health professional to be on that as well, because we are concerned with how everybody is being able to navigate a pandemic.
And how is the health of the staff?
That's a great question. And, you know, maybe we can have some teachers sometime and we can do a show of what is that like. We did change one thing that we asked. The staff said, if we're in 100% remote and I'm a parent or I'm a mommy or daddy, what do I do with my kids? I don't have childcare. So to accommodate that, staff can bring their children to school. They have to stay in their classrooms, be masked, and we're trying to do what we can for our staff for that. They're having a hard time. We all are having a hard time. And, you know, teachers want to see their kids, the students, face-to-face. Everybody wants to be face-to-face, in person, on site. That's what we all want. And that's just not how the world's operating right now, that we can do safely.
And the other question I have in my queue for you is, what kind of things are you communicating to the parents and students about the best way to slow the spread again, to flatten the curve again?
I've always, in every weekly communication in our schools, just put out all the same messaging about, you know, wash your hands, keep your bubble small, the same things we've been hearing. And we need some new messaging, and the state knows that too on my state calls with public information officers. This message is old and it's stale. Like, how can we help people realize this is really important? And I think the biggest thing is to just remember this: there is an end to this. There will be an end. And it's hard. And, you know, somebody said yesterday, there's no I in team. And right now we need a team of us, of everybody in our communities, to do the right thing personally and the right thing together. So we'll be working on some more messaging. Our principals and our secretaries and our schools are putting out messaging. And I think everybody's tired. And unfortunately, it's here and it's spreading.
Well, I sure appreciate you calling in today. I know you have an Office of Emergency Management meeting that you need to get to.
Yeah. So thank you. And if I get done with the other meeting, I'll pop back on over here.
Okay. You give a call if you get done with your other meeting.
Okay. Thanks so much, everybody.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
And that's Peggy Erkineff from the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. Nurse Lauren Carroll from Homer Public Health Center and Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. Numbers are way up all over the state. Case numbers are still relatively small on the Southern Peninsula. Can you talk a little bit about the rate of growth of positive cases?
Sure thing, Kathleen. One thing is particularly clear is that we're seeing the rate of growth of COVID is at its highest point. Yep. So that's since March and before to now. The rate of spread is higher now than it's ever been. And it's really highlighting wow, Peggy Sue kind of said it. I really appreciate everything that she had to say. But we're over 15,000 cases here in Alaska, and we're accelerating to a point where Alaska is getting over 300 new confirmed cases per day. And so that's got a lot of implications, and we're facing the same drivers as we have since early in the pandemic. The drivers being that what is it that makes the virus transmit from one host to another? And how can we stop that transmission?
So have you settled on, has the medical community settled on droplet transmission, aerosol transmission? I mean, I know it's a lot of the same information that we were giving people months ago, but since there's no vaccine, it's doing the same things again, correct?
Yeah, you got it. I don't really have any new messaging there. Just that the virus transmits from host to host very much like seasonal influenza or a common cold. But the difference there is that there is no vaccine yet for COVID. So that means that we're all particularly at risk for transmitting the host from one person to the next, but also the pool of susceptibles or the total number of people where it's possible to get COVID is very large, and that's one of the major drivers of the pandemic continuing.
And a listener has emailed in a question or called in a question. I think this is for both Nurse Lorne and Dorotha from South Peninsula Hospital. The listener asks, President Trump recovered from COVID and made it sound like there were drugs available to cure the illness and mitigate the disease. Does our hospital have any of these drugs, and do they know how to administer them? And I want to extend that, actually, because a lot of things come from the state. Does the state have access to the drugs that the president took?
You know, the virus is a very difficult thing to treat. There is no known treatment outside of supportive treatment. So folks that, like, say, for example, to get hospitalized with COVID, some of the treatments involve fluid replacement and other supportive measures, but there is no treatment for COVID. And you're kind of outlining an important point here is that's why COVID's so important, and what makes it so different from seasonal influenza is there is no treatment and there is no preventive measure like a vaccine yet. But maybe the positive thing here might be is that we expect that we might be seeing a COVID-19 vaccine in the near future. So communities are getting ready now to disperse that vaccine to the highest priority folks first, and then based upon availability of the vaccine, you know, opening up availability to other folks as well.
And to be clear, that vaccine, when it is available, would be administered through the state agency, through Department of Health and Social Services, right? That's where the hospital would get their vaccine doses. Is that correct?
Well, that's a good question, and it kind of depends upon the lens. From one perspective, what you're saying is correct. That vaccine, for the most part, will come through the state of Alaska through the Division of Public Health's immunization program and be dispersed. But the other thing I want to highlight here is it'd be dispersed in part through existing systems for giving vaccine. So, you know, we really can't do this without our partners. And we know this from seasonal influenza every year, but we also know this from H1N1 in 2009. The vaccine will probably be available in a couple different places, and planning is going on right now. And so some things I would say to expect would be public information available on where to get the vaccine, like a point of dispensing, and then also potentially at your medical home or the place where you see your doctor.
Thanks, Nurse Lauren. So I'm about to move on to Dorotha Ferraro, but before I do, can you give a brief overview of the case count in the state? In terms of, especially in terms, what one of my emails, especially in terms of hospitalization. Like, how many people are actually being hospitalized at this point in terms of how many people have been determined to be positive for COVID-19?
If that was for me, Dorotha, can you help me with that one?
Okay. Dorotha, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning.
So as far as hospitalization goes, right now there are, I'm looking, statewide there are 63 individuals hospitalized COVID positive, and there are 17 that are what are called PUI. They're suspected or a person under investigation. They're suspected to have COVID. It hasn't been confirmed yet. That's statewide. And those patients, they make up 7% of all hospitalized patients. So right now, COVID patients are 7% of all hospitalized. And according to the governor's briefing last night, that is pretty consistent with statewide numbers, that is what hospitalization looks like throughout the nation. The great thing about our state dashboard is that you can look at it and you can see that statewide picture, but you know, that's not that informative since we're such a large state and our communities are so far apart geographically. So you can break that down by community. And if you look at Anchorage, for example, there in Anchorage, there are 45 people, you know, so of those 70, 45 are positive in Anchorage, 14 suspected in Anchorage. So that's, you know, a good portion are in the Anchorage area. As far as South Peninsula Hospital goes, there are no
You cut out there briefly. I think what you were saying is that it's been months since anyone was hospitalized at South Peninsula Hospital for COVID. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, because you cut out and it was hard. At the meeting on Monday, at the Homer City Council meeting on Monday, Dorotha, you were talking about the way that the tests get to Anchorage to be processed and sent back to you. And you mentioned that, I think on Monday at the meeting, that the tests that you have in-house at the hospital come from the state, and you're not going to be able to get those anymore. And even if you could get them from the state, you wouldn't have the personnel to administer tests. How close are we to getting a quicker turnaround time to get results?
Thank you for that question, because there was some great news last night on the governor's press conference that the state they've heard us and the pleas from the other hospitals and communities about the need to continue a statewide approach to getting supplies to us, as opposed to us all on our own having to order our own, and our numbers aren't big enough to compete with other places in the country and really worldwide. So the state has agreed to continue boosting the stockpile of all supplies, not just testing supplies, but also gloves and masks and everything. So that was great news that the governor announced that last night. That was a big relief to us. So I hate this. I hate that this testing thing is so complicated, but there's the element of the swab where you gather the sample. And then there's the process of running that sample. So there is no issue, there are no concerns and no limited supplies as far as the materials to collect the sample. No problem there. Where it starts then becoming different lanes is where those are run. And without concern, the state lab is there to run them for us. The challenge there is the turnaround time because of not having daily flights. So in addition to the state lab not always being in a prompt turnaround, there's the issue of having to drive them up. The other alternative is running those tests right here at South Peninsula Hospital. Now that becomes a supply issue as well as a manpower issue, because it takes 90 minutes to run one test, and it takes a very unique medium or product to run the test to be able to get the results. That supply right there is the supply that's limited, and that is the supply that the governor said last night that they are going to be ordering more for the communities. So that was a big relief. Will that change how many tests or whose tests gets run in-house? Not immediately, because all he said was that they're going to start ordering. So until they actually do and it starts showing up, we'll probably still limit which tests are run in-house versus which ones go up to the state lab. But, you know, down the road, it might change things.
Okay, thanks, Dorotha. And Jenny Carroll from the city of Homer, I want to bring you into this conversation. And first of all, to let everybody know, last call for questions. Give your calls and Chloe can take down your question if you like, or you can go to air with it. But just so often we get all our calls in the last 2 or 3 minutes when I really can't take them. So Jenny Carroll from the city of Homer, let's talk about economic relief right now, because it's almost time for the mortgage and rent and fishermen's relief funds to get going. And is the nonprofit still open?
Sure. We have quite an array of programs out there right now, keeping me very busy and hopefully keeping those in the community sustained through this prolonged pandemic. So we have the Small Business Economic Relief Grant Round 2 is open now. It's closing out its second week. That's a two-week application period. It's been well received. Thank you, everyone, for getting your applications in. I want to remind you that the application period closes Sunday, November 1, and people need to drop off their applications at City Hall or send them in online through our website, or if you're mailing them, it has to be postmarked by November 1st. We'll be closing that at that time. We also have another program open, round two of the Nonprofit Economic Relief Grant Program. It closes a week later, November 8th. We encourage everyone to get their applications in then. And then after Council passed the Fisherman's Economic Relief Program on Monday, I've been working to pull together the application materials. You can go on the City of Homer website at the Economic Relief Grant Program page, and there's an article there about how to get ready to apply. We will not be issuing the applications until November 9th, but those in the commercial fishing industry with boats that base primarily out of Homer for their operations can go online and see the kinds of things that need to be pulled together for a successful application. That period will be open, that grant period will be open from November 9th through November 29th. So a good long application period, as there's a little more documentation required for that program. I am will next be turning my attention to working with AHFC on launching the Mortgage and Rent Relief Grant Program. That program is has some income limitations. AHFC has a list of people who have applied to that program already in our area, and we will be accepting new applicants. We'll be putting out information about that when we have all the pieces together. It's getting close, and I hope to be able to launch it by the 1st of November. We'll just see how my time goes.
Right. Well, coming up this weekend is Halloween, and then on Tuesday, well, an in-person voting, absentee in-person voting has been going on for weeks, and Tuesday is Election Day. So does the city have recommendations about best practice for Halloween, and what's the plan for Election Day?
Sure. We do have listed on our website, if you go to the main page, there is an article there about being creative around Halloween and how to do that safely. I would say the main rules apply. We want to have everybody out there enjoying the holiday, especially for the kids. It's something really to look forward to. And as with everything else at this time of year, in the midst of the COVID surge, we encourage people to seek out lower risk activities to help keep community transmission down. So, you know, if you could do your activities with members of your household or people in your close circle or your close bubble, you know, the typical activities, carving and decorating pumpkins. If you can do that outside, it looks like it might be a cold one, so there'll be a little frost on those pumpkins. But anything that is outdoors is better than in an indoor enclosed space if you're celebrating with people outside of your bubble. Certainly being able to decorate our houses, doing maybe a scary movie night with your kids, or a fun Halloween movie, doing scavenger hunts. There are a lot of ways that we can celebrate in a different creative way in light of where we are presently with COVID-19. So I encourage families to look at our website and seek out tips and resources for having a safe Halloween. The same goes for voting. Voting is open and happening in City Hall for the election coming up on November 3rd. People can absentee in-person vote through November 2nd, weekdays, 8 to 5. We've had a pretty good stream of people. Everyone is masking up and keeping a safe distance. There are masks available at City Hall when you come in if you need one. It's all going very smoothly and well, and so keep that in mind if you want to vote early. Then, again, the City Hall will be open for in-person voting on Election Day.
Thanks, Jenny Carroll from the City of Homer. One of the things that's very important at this time is to for all of us to stay as healthy as possible so we don't become a burden on the system, on the healthcare system, if the need arises. Dorotha Ferraro, that means flu shots, and there's a free flu shot clinic this Saturday, is that right?
That's right. It is this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and it is at the parking lot of the hospital's specialty clinic, family care clinic. So it's 4201 Bartlett Street. So you just head up Bartlett Street. You'll see the signs on the left-hand side. It is from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. It is a drive-through event. I think you'll enjoy the fact that the staff is going to get into the holiday theme and be dressed holiday or Halloweenish. But there are it's for children 6 months and up and adults, and there are senior doses. So this is pretty much a flu shot clinic for anybody except infants. So 6 months and up, and it's a drive-through event. No appointments necessary. First come, first serve, and it's free. Homer Medical Center and staff of West Wing Clinic will be the ones administering it. And we encourage everybody to, if you haven't gotten your flu shot yet, please come because we have plenty of supplies available for this Saturday, 10 to 2.
Thanks. And Nurse Lauren Carroll, do you have any recommendations for people? I know we talked about it a little earlier. It's hard to make this messaging fresh for people because we've been at it for months now. But if you would briefly remind people the best way to slow transmission of COVID virus.
Yeah, sure thing. You're highlighting an important central point there is that we've been in it for a long time and we're probably going to be in it for a lot longer looking forward. So I think that I've really appreciated all the folks that, you know, in terms of organizations and individuals and families that are listing out and highlighting the ways that folks can build on their resilience factors. And what I mean here is, and you're already kind of highlighting them for sure, is that what can we do to stay connected and also to not be a burden on existing healthcare systems? When you look at these, tables and all that stuff that's available on the data hub online, these numbers are pointing almost straight up, and this indicates exponential growth. So choices that you make today are really going to impact all of us tomorrow. So thanks. I guess I'd say we're all in this together.
Okay. And Dorotha Ferraro, anything I've left out for you?
Yeah, I will. I'll give a new message that I think Peggy did a couple weeks ago, but I liked it. So I'm going to repeat it. And that's do the three W's and avoid the three C's. Three W's, wear your mask, wash your hands, and watch your distance. And the three C's that you want to avoid, kind of close contact with others and closed spaces and crowded groups. So do your W's and avoid your C's. And it works. Like, oh my gosh, Fairbanks, their numbers were, their curve was a straight line up and down a week or two ago, and everybody kicked into gear and tested and did their contact tracing and shared the information with their close contacts and started all their heavy mitigation. And guess what? Their curve is flat. If you go on to the website and look at Fairbanks, because you can break everything down by borough, theirs is a flat. They flattened out. We can do it. This community has proven two or three times now, as we've started to see numbers go up, that we can do it. So I feel pretty hopeful. I get that we're going indoors. I get that statewide and nationwide the curve is looking up, but I feel pretty good that our community, we have the knowledge and we've demonstrated that we can do it.
Okay, thanks to Rotha Ferraro from South Peninsula Hospital, Nurse Lauren Carroll from the Homer Public Health Center and the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services, and Jenny Carroll from the City of Homer, also Peggy Erkineff from Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. Thank you all for participating. This has been the regular Thursday COVID Brief. I'm Kathleen Gustafson. Good morning, everybody. You guys have a terrific day.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.